question for you. Would you rather, in fashion of our last video, would you rather be forced to listen to your least favorite Taylor album forever, or you're only allowed to listen to your favorite Taylor song forever?
Oh, that is a good question, Santa. My least favorite album was, like, Debut, unfortunately. And I don't know what my favorite song would be. I feel like I have so many.
What are you vibing with right now? Like, what is your favorite right now? How about that? Or, like, what you're listening to a lot right now? Can I ask that?
I guess something from the Evermore, maybe? I'm not sure which one, though. There's too many. I like Ivy a lot.
Okay.
So, Ivy versus Debut.
And you can't listen to any other music.
At all? Yeah. Ever in my life again?
Yeah, it's either Debut forever or just Ivy forever.
Those are both terrible options, I think.
Because that's the point.
Why am I being limited so much? Okay, I guess I'll go with Debut forever because I like the variety, at least. I can't stick with one single song. I'll get sick of it. What about you?
I think same as you, my least favorite album is Debut. I think my favorite song, I like you, also it differs. I feel like I can't say for sure. I guess right now it would be Haunted.
Oh, Haunted's so good.
So I feel like I will just listen to Haunted forever because I am a bit afraid of getting sick of it, but also I feel like Haunted is so good that you will not get sick of it.
That's
so
true.
That's my logic.
You picked a great song for
Thank
this.
Thank you. You yeah. also picked a great song in IMQ.
Okay, then. I guess since we're already on the topic of it, we can get into introducing what it is.
Yeah, so as two very long-term Taylor Swift fans, we thought it would be really interesting to do kind of a discussion about, more specifically, we do know that she's, like, the superstar and she's doing all these things, but more about her own, like, promotional advertising marketing appeal that her and her team have curated. Most particularly in the post Eras Tour world, but this also does apply to what she has said before then.
Yeah, and we're gonna go specifically into, I guess, her merchandise, her whatever she sells to fans, and also her tour advertising and like the tickets. I know that was a big topic back when it started out, as well as her music specifically, and I'm sure many people are aware of this, but the different remixes that we have. So just as a disclaimer, we are not professionals on the topic. We can't like speak from, I guess, a very detailed analysis, but it's mostly our experiences and what we know from the research we've done on it.
I'm very excited to get into this.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot to say. And there's a lot I want to say as well for it.
Do you want to just talk about how you got into Taylor Swift, maybe? Or, like, anything you've noticed in the past about, in terms of promotion or advertising?
I mean, I grew up in the era where her 1989 album was very popular. And I think that was around when I was in grade 2, 3. Like, she was very popular back then. But in the sense that, like, a lot of people just liked hating on her Shake It Off video. Like, everyone knew it, but it was just, I guess, looked down upon for some reason. And I still liked it at the time, so that's how I got into her. And then my mom also liked her, so I guess she shared some of the songs she liked with me. And I became a very big fan throughout the years, but especially in middle school. That was when my, I guess, like, she became my favorite artist. How about you, though?
I think for me, it was 2020. It was before Folklore got released.
Mm.
But I think I really got into Speak Now and then Reputation. And it was just kind of those two for a little bit. And then I got into her other albums. So it was a bit later than you. But yeah.
I actually didn't like Reputation when I first listened to it.
When did you first listen?
I was quite young. So the thing is, I was like, wow, this is like so... like different from what she's done before.
So
like,
edgy.
Yeah. I didn't like that as a kid. I was like, she needs to go back to her roots, okay? She's like, she needs to stop with this. But then I listened again. I'm like, what was I thinking?
Were you happier with Lover? Because it does kind of go back to her roots more than Reputation.
Yeah, I think at the time, I was so young when I like, was thinking that about Reputation. I feel like that's why my views differ so much. But I did like love her a lot back then. But yeah, she is quite an inspirational artist, I think, and influential in many ways.
She's such a superstar. Like, when I first got into her, I knew she was very famous, of course.
Yeah.
But I could have never imagined someone could reach this level of famous today.
Mm-hmm. It's very impressive. And I feel proud of her as someone who's watched her journey throughout the years.
Yeah, so let's just get into it.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess as an artist with her level of influence and all the albums that she's done throughout the years, it's inevitable that she's gonna have a lot of merch to go along with it. For example, with every album, and now the Eras Tour itself, it has a lot of merch. And I guess I've noticed a few patterns or trends in the way that she's marketed this merch. Like, specifically, she has this broadcast channel that I joined on Instagram, and then whenever new merch comes out, I would get a notification. So obviously, a few years ago, I was like very excited to be a part of that, and I guess just get as much merch as I can, because I remember when I was especially starting out in middle school with liking her music, I was like, I really wanted to get her merch, especially the Lover ones. I remember I got this one phone case with Lover. The words quickly faded out, but yeah, now you can't tell it was Taylor Swift merch. Overall, though, I think I, as a fan, was always looking forward to whatever she posted that was on her website.
I think her merch designs, I don't mean to be a hater, but I feel like sometimes, okay, I feel like most of the time, it's nothing really special. Sometimes it'll be cute, but I feel like you see so many fan-made designs online or on Etsy, and they're so gorgeous and they're so creative, and I feel like her merch team, they just kind of pale in comparison, because a lot of the merch, at least for Midnight's, I think with Torture Poets Department they improved, but for Midnight's I remember so much of it was just them slapping the album cover on like a shirt or on pants or whatever, and that was it. Whereas I feel like there's a lot more you can do with lyrics and like visuals and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do think in the time that the Torture Poets Department came out, I started realizing how money-centric the merch of Taylor is. I don't know if it's, like, her own desires or her team, or I don't know, like, who controls this. But I feel like there's just so many different productions of merch available for fans. And the way that she makes some of them limited editions, it's, like, I feel like it puts fans in a tough spot, because you never know what she's going to release next. And if you think that it's limited edition, then you never want to miss out, right? If you're a dedicated fan especially, and you're like, oh, I want to collect as much as I can. But then I had this experience with, I think, either a CD or something else. And I was looking at it online, and then it was like, limited edition, get it now in this 24 hours. And then I was like, oh, I really want to buy this. But then I just ended up not getting it because I thought it was, like, too much of an investment. And then, like, I don't know, a week later, it's like, oh, actually, we're going to extend this deadline and you can get it back now. So at that point, I kind of got a little annoyed, because obviously, if you're going to market it as limited edition, just let it be that.
I feel like, unfortunately, in this industry, a lot of artists do that. Like, they frame it as limited edition, but then it comes back around and it's not really limited. But it's still not a good thing to do.
Yeah. I feel like it preys a little bit on fans' tendency to, I guess, like, want to spend as much as I can on collecting this merch. Because some are really dedicated and they will want to have as much as they can. Like, you know, FOMO is a real thing. They're gonna have a fear of missing out from this new merch.
You know what bothers me? When it's something new, but it's a Target exclusive, and it's just for people in America.
That always bothers me, because I know all the girls that was Target exclusive.
Oh, yeah.
On either, I think, a CD or something. But you couldn't get it if you were anywhere else. And so all you had to rely on was unreleased versions on Spotify or YouTube or TikTok, having snippets of it.
I think also, even if it is Target exclusive, I feel like the price never justified it being Target exclusive, in my opinion. Like, we live kind of close to America, so we can, like, go down to Target if we wanted to.
Well, yeah.
I don't know why we would do that, like, just to get the CD or whatever it is. But even if we went, it's definitely not worth the price, I feel like.
I agree. They're quite expensive for just, like, maybe one or two additional songs. And I noticed she does this with pretty much every album. There's these bonus tracks, and then, you know.
But I guess we'll get more into that in the music edition section. I really like Sabrina Carpenter's merch designs. I feel like a lot, they're very creative, and I like that it doesn't directly point out, like, oh, this is Sabrina Carpenter, this is her face, this is the album. Like, it's more subtle, and it's focusing more on, like, the aesthetics of the album rather than just the album cover or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like that it's wearable. Like, you can actually wear it to whatever, I don't know, school or something else. But I feel like a lot of the Taylor merch, where it's just her face on it, I would not wear that in public.
Yeah, and it's not even, like, because I'm embarrassed. I just don't want to wear something with someone else's face on it in general.
It's too much, in my opinion. I would wear something that's... I would wear a lot of her fan-made designs on Etsy, like you said.
Yeah, if only their shipping wasn't so long.
Exactly. Yeah, and since the shipping is also another thing on the website, the Taylor Swift website, since you're already paying so much for something, it's going to, like, amount to over 100 if you're getting, for example, a basic cardigan or sweatshirt. I actually had an experience getting a cardigan last year. It was with the 1989 one, and I got that one, even though I didn't like the colors much, because I wanted to get one cardigan before, I guess, I don't know, for some reason, I just wanted one single cardigan, because I already missed out on the traditional folklore one, and so I guess I got that, and it was around my birthday, and it's interesting, when I was, like, driving on the way here, I got a notification for the Midnight's cardigan that came out, and so it came out around the same time that the 1989 one came out last year, so I feel like it's interesting that she's releasing the Midnight's one now, when it wasn't released during the actual Midnight's album. I'm not sure if it's something with seasonal marketing, maybe because she's associated with fall, and, like, it makes more sense to get a cardigan during the fall, rather than, I'm not sure, when did Midnight's come out?
I think, like, 2 years ago today, that we're filming.
Oh, like, still in October?
It came out on October 21st, I think.
Hmm.
So I guess it kind of makes sense that, like, she releases it today. Actually, I thought the 2 year one is a bit random because she's already in another era, so that's, but I guess I kind of understand the reasoning behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do think it's interesting how the prices have especially gone up, because I saw the Folklore one, it was getting, like, it was brought back on this website, and I wanted to get one because it's, like, the most, like, it's the best one in my opinion.
It's the prettiest, the most iconic.
But it was, like, $100.
Oh my god, when the Folklore cardigan first came out in 2020, I remember seeing it, and it wasn't even that expensive, but I was like, you know what, maybe I'll just not get it, and I'll wait. Yeah. No, I didn't know that it would be sold out in, like, 5 minutes every single time it comes back.
No, the sales are insane. It's too much, because you really need to rush to it.
I saw someone, they thrifted a red cardigan, and I was like, Who is giving away their red cardigan to a thrift store? Like, you need to sell that. You are going to make bank if you don't want it anymore.
That is so kind of them. I really don't like that. I don't know if this person did it, but if somebody else maybe got to it, they would have, like, resold it for $200 on Etsy or something else.
Depop?
Yeah, maybe. Depop?
How do you say
Depop.
It? Depop.
Yeah. At one point in my life, I wanted to, like, crochet the cardigans.
Oh, nice.
But then I looked at the studio and it was an hour long, and that didn't like show all the parts where she was actually doing it. Like everything was sped up through her actual thing. And I was like, I'm never gonna finish this. It would take me a solid 2 years, I think.
Crocheting the stars just looks really scary to me.
That's true. Oh, but like all the details for the cardigan scares me. I feel like it's too much.
Can you buy a cardigan from someone who already crocheted it online? Or is that, that's going to be really expensive, right?
It is expensive because, first of all, if they're getting paid minimum wage an hour, which they're not even, it's going to be, I don't know, over 300, you know? Because crocheting, it takes so long.
Yeah.
And they'll probably want to get their money's worth. But yeah, I realized that was insane and I'm never going to do that. I stuck to crocheting the Harry Styles cardigan.
How are you on that? Are you almost done?
No. I guess 70% done. But just sewing all the squares together, that will take long.
I saw something kind of crazy, but you know how when Harry was on tour, he was on tour for forever.
Yeah.
This one woman, she posted about how she first saw Harry when she was pregnant, and then she has this 2-year-old child and Harry is still on tour.
Wow. it's a little, oh my gosh. So one single tour?
It was his, the most recent tour he did, where he toured for 2 years.
Harry's house?
Yeah, Harry's house, the tour.
Oh.
And then this is reminding me, because recently I saw a TikTok of someone being I saw the Eras tour when I was pregnant with my first baby. And now I'm going back for another show, and I'm pregnant with her little brother. And I was like, oh my god, Taylor really has been on tour for a while.
Wait, yeah, I feel like, when will she rest? When is her last tour date?
I think this is the last leg of the tour, but I don't know how long this leg of the tour is.
I feel like quite a while. Mine is in November.
Maybe it'll end in 2025?
Then she can finally rest.
Or maybe she doesn't want to. Maybe she's gonna keep hustling and release something new.
She's already a billionaire.
It's for her love of the craft, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of love of the craft, do you want to talk about the music additions? This is quite controversial.
I agree. I think being such a great artist and having so many songs, she does have many vinyls and CDs and digital downloads, I guess. I don't know how that works, but she has a lot of those to go along with it. And it shows if you look at her section of music in the Taylor Swift store online.
I do think it's very interesting. I know that she has done new versions or remixes for her albums in the past. So with the Tortured Poets Department specifically, there have been a lot of versions of the album that has received a lot of critique online.
The first time I started noticing it was in Folklore, where there was a lot of versions of Willow.
Mm.
I remember there was a witchy version of it.
Yeah.
And then for All Too Well, there was a Lonely Girl Autumn version. And there were so many versions for All Too Well, too. And I don't know, at that point I was like, oh my gosh, am I the only one who thinks this is a little crazy? Why are there so many versions? I'm not sure what the point of these is. Is it to maybe extend how long the song is relevant for? Just profiting off of one song and seeing how long it can last? Or is it truly for the fans' experience of different versions?
Okay, I understand, at least with, and I'm not saying necessarily that these versions have been very, successful or offer something very new, but at least they're different from the original. They are, kind of a new song in a way. I feel like with versions of albums, though, that's where it kind of gets tricky, because I don't understand. It's this is the version of this album, but you have one voice note from the making of one of the songs, but then this voice note sounds really, really similar to the song. Why are you paying extra for this? You can just hear it online from someone else who bought it. I don't understand. And it's for it's not even a collection of voice notes. It's one new version with each voice note of the song.
Wait, by voice note, do you mean bonus track?
No, it's like a voice note of like her early plans of the song.
Oh, okay. I see. She does that?
Wait, do you want to see?
Yeah.
Oh. It's, I guess what I'm just saying, it feels like a compilation. So it's like one version, and here's a compilation. But it's not, it's like separate versions. So you have to pay for like multiple different versions to get the voice note phone memo for the songs.
That is so strange. This, okay, I feel like this is a little going back in her journey, but I remember buying my first CD and it was 1989. That was back when there were, like, it wasn't Taylor's version versus original. It was just the original, 1989. And so I got that as my first CD of Taylor's. And it had, like, these Polaroids. And it also had, I guess, her earlier thoughts, I guess, when going into the album. And I feel like it was a whole experience, you know? But now, like, I feel like you just can't get the same thing with these new CDs.
Mm.
I feel like just back then, it was a lot easier to have everything in one single CD. Like, there was no need for multiple. But now, there's so many.
Yeah, yeah. I do get it to a degree. Like, the thing is that people do buy it. Like, we can trash it all we like, but people will buy it. But, like, should they be buying it? I am kind of judging them a little bit. I don't want to be judgy, but I don't understand. Why are you buying so many versions of this album when you can literally hear this voice memo on TikTok for free if one person buys it?
I feel like it's a kind of, I feel like there is a term for this. It's a collectioner's desire. You just want to own every single possible thing you can.
How fancy.
Like, if you see something else coming out, you feel a compelling urge to buy it. I feel like I had that at one point, but not to this extent that I would actually go out of my way to collect these voice memo different versions of the album. I can understand it in theory, but not when it actually comes to spending my money on all those versions.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand, like, when, do you remember when Hits Different was,
yeah, yeah,
it was only available on CD in a Target or something?
Yeah.
I understand that because it's a new song, but I don't know. I don't know.
Then again, how are we Canadians supposed to get access to it if it's in all the way in Target?
We're not, because only the Americans are important here. No one else. Did you hear the accusations of her blocking people on charts because of the versions?
You need to tell me more about that.
I feel stupidly chronically online right now. But basically, there was this theory online that a lot of people were saying was that she releases a new version of Tortured Poets or like of a song to block another female artist from going number one. And like, I feel like you can't prove this. Like, obviously, maybe it's just timed and it just happened to coincide. But like, for example, I think Billie, I think she was, her album or one of her songs, it was going to go number one somewhere. And then Taylor, like, the next day after that was announced, like, she's expected to. Taylor dropped some sort of new version. And then Charlie XCX, she's expected to go number one in the UK.
I saw this one, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, very recently, like, Taylor dropped. And then, like, Taylor was, like, the number one instead. And then, this is really funny. I saw online, I think it was projected that Chapel Roan was going to, she was going to achieve something. And then someone was like, oh, I'm just waiting for Taylor Swift to drop a new version. And then, like, not even 24 hours later, she dropped, like, a new version of the album. And I thought that was really funny. And the person was like, I told y'all. But I think it's just, like, I don't think she needs to do that. Like, she probably would have outsold them anyways because she's so huge. Like, I feel like she doesn't need to do that. But also, I don't know. Maybe she is very ambitious in that sense and is trying to block other people. I don't know.
I can't speak on her intentions, but I think, like you said, if she, like, she's already such a bigger artist than most. I know there's so many new ones emerging, and they're all very popular as well, but Taylor Swift is just, like, she's very big.
Yeah, she's mega.
She's built her fame to such a great extent that there's no need to be doing that as well. So, I remember, like, I saw the Charlie XCX thing. Yeah. I don't know how true this is or how valid of a theory it is, but...
Yeah, it is all speculation.
Yeah. I mean, all these new versions, though, I feel like maybe instead of blocking, like, with the purpose of blocking it out, it's just to make her bigger.
Yeah.
And not focused on, I guess, undermining the talent of others.
That makes sense. Like, personal
growth. Yeah, I feel like I can see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess this kind of ties into her various remixes. Like, by that I mean, maybe 10 for a single song.
I remember trying to listen to, there were a couple anti-hero remixes back in 2022 or 2023, and I tried to listen to them, but I hated them. I know the remixes are not for everyone, but it was like the same song with just a beat over it, and I was like, oh, is this club music? Like, what is this for? Who is listening to this?
No, that's what I wonder too when I see all these remixes, because I know that, I guess, DJs, they're supposed to make remixes too, right, and prepare them ahead of time, but is this doing their work for them? Are they taking these instead of the original song? Does it just make their job easier? Is that who it's intended for? Because who in their right mind would be listening to Antihero with a beat, or I don't know, like, I Can Do It with a Broken Heart with a beat, because I feel like that is a little horrendous. I would never do that in my free time. That would kind of come up in a nightmare of mine, I think. So I don't know why anyone would be doing that in their own time, if it's not for some kind of a club remix. I do wonder, though, are all these remixes just for monetary profit?
They're doing well. Like, no matter what, the remixes will do well. I don't really know, like, what the demographic is, but they're doing really well. Earlier, when we were researching, we were looking at the I Can Do It With a Broken Heart remix, and it had, like, 800,000 views. For a remix, and you're like, whoa.
And that was the Dostoevsky version. At first, I thought it was a Russian author, like Tolstoy. I was like, why is she doing a remix of a Russian author's version on it? But apparently it's a type of music that is really upbeat and, I guess, joyful. So that's what it was. But the song itself is kind of already upbeat. Musically, you know.
I've given up on understanding these remixes. They are what they are. Do we want to move on to maybe the tour? Because I feel like the Eras tour really did change how she marketed and promoted her. She and her team marketed and promoted herself and her brand and her music. Like, the Eras tour changed everything.
I agree. I feel like this has to set some kind of a record for the most economically profitable tour of all time. Or in some sense, like...
Isn't it, like, already in the billions?
Yeah, and every country she visits, they profit a lot. I was seeing some video about this for when she comes to Toronto and how much we're going to benefit from. Like, the economy is going to benefit from that.
It's insane. Like, this tour... It absolutely changed everything.
I know. We were reading this article before about how, I guess, successful her tours are and what they do for the economy. And we saw something about Singapore and how, like, flights, they went up 186% during her first day there. And how it already, like, was basically helping them with hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. And so that's a little insane. Just the amount of influence that one artist can have. Yeah.
I don't really know much about this, but I think you can speak more to this. But dynamic pricing is a really big thing.
Yeah, I remember when she first started selling tickets, or at least for the Canadian tickets, because that was a bit later on in the tour date. I was seeing a lot of people say how her tickets were dynamically priced, whereas if the demand for the tickets is high, then the prices will be high. And you can see that reflected through the prices. So obviously she's a very big artist. Her demands will always be very high for any concert, any tour date that she has. So the prices, they were relatively high in comparison to maybe when she first started out. And I guess if the demand was low, it would have been lower pricing. And that's kind of a way to prevent scalpers from getting access to the tickets.
Didn't people try and sue Ticketmaster because they were saying they weren't selling the tickets properly or something?
I wouldn't know about that.
Like, I remember it went to, like, the U.S. court or something. Like, they were debating about, like, should people be recompensated for Ticketmaster's mistakes?
What kind of mistakes, though?
I'm not entirely sure, but I think in terms of selling, I don't know if it had to do with dynamic pricing or the way they were selling seats or something like that, but a lot of people were very angry.
I can understand. The tour prices were already very high. If Ticketmaster made any mistakes, then that would certainly not reflect well on the fans' responses to it. I was lucky to get tickets, though. I think there were quite a few opportunities as Canadians. For example, I own an RBC bank account, and they were doing an Avion Awards thing, where if you had RBC and if you signed up for the Avion Awards, then you had an additional chance of, like, basically entering your name for getting a chance of buying tickets. So, like, on top of the normal sale on Ticketmaster, I got another, like, Avion Awards opportunity. So I got, like, two in total. I feel like I was very lucky in that sense, because some people, they sign up, I don't know, they made new email accounts, they had so many, like, they got all their family and friends to sign up, and they didn't get a single opportunity. So I do feel lucky for that, because there were many advantages, I guess, of having an RBC account at the time. That's also an interesting thing, though, where she, I don't know, partners with brands, and then that gives fans more opportunities to get tickets to the tour, like RBC in this case, or Capital One, like you were saying. Capital One credit card holders, they had more chances.
I think also in relation to the tour, this is a bit different, but like with the surprise songs, I thought it was really interesting, because in the, I would say like maybe the first year of the Eras tour, you had people very highly anticipating, oh, like, what two new songs were you going to hear? And I think that definitely helped with the appeal, right? Because you had people coming in and seeing multiple shows just to try and hear their favorite song be a surprise song.
That was always a bit, like, that always astounded me, hearing about people going to, like, more than two concerts, I think. That is a little insane for me.
People going to, like, 30 shows, going on, like, multiple planes to get to all of them.
Yeah, traveling across the country.
Or the globe in some people's cases.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like, I know this was pretty controversial, because people were saying it was taking away opportunities, especially when Americans did it, and they went to, like, I guess Europe for Europe tours.
I feel like, I guess if you didn't get to see her in America, I don't know if it's understandable, but I do see where you're coming from. But if you already saw her and you just want to see her again, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I really do agree. It takes away opportunities that are very lacking in the first place.
I saw a lot of Americans trying to justify this by being like, oh, well, she didn't have the Tortured Poets department, like, part of the show for her America dates. Like, she only started doing that part of the show because the album came out when she was doing, like, the other global dates. So that's when we have to go see her. But I don't agree with that. I feel like because you get all these opportunities to go see her, like, she comes to multiple shows in multiple, like, cities, that should justify, like, I understand why global Swifties or whatever, they have the Tortured Poets section to themselves, because there's so much less shows for them to go to. Like, it's like two shows per country or three shows per country. So I feel like that's a bit, I understand why.
No, that's very true. I think it's a bit selfish to not take into account how many opportunities you're taking away from others. Yeah. I think something interesting about her marketing of the tour, or even just advertising of it, and the way she went about selling her tickets, is the order of release of tour dates or countries where the tour is going to be held. So obviously, since she is American, she's going to be starting off with the American tour dates. And there were many, and I mean like many, more than in any other country. But I guess like when it came out, I remember a lot of people were like, when is the blah, blah, blah date going to come out? For example, Argentina, I don't know, or Canada. I don't know, a lot of people were saying that too. And so at the time, some people thought maybe she's never going to come to my country, so I need to get the American tour dates. Especially if it's relatively close. Like, we live in Canada, so you can drive to Canada. You can drive to the U.S. to see her. And I feel like that would be better than, like, Europe tour dates. So when those dates came out, I guess it was mostly focused on more popular areas where concerts are typically held. And so that took away a little bit from the fan experience because you didn't know if you were going to get her coming in your country.
I remember, I think we had this conversation before she announced the Canada date. So we were talking about how we were worried she wouldn't come to Canada at all.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with so many people because we genuinely thought she would not come to Canada because she hadn't announced anything and she had already announced shows for many other countries.
I actually know someone, a friend of a friend, who got tickets to the American tour dates at the time when Canada wasn't announced yet.
Oh, nice. Which one? Like, which date?
I think it was New York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I knew someone who, I think she and a fellow teacher, I knew someone, she and her friend, they flew down for, it was either the first night or the second night in Arizona, like, ever of the tour. They flew down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know if it's purposeful, but it does create, I guess, the question of why she can't announce it earlier on, or at least confirm she's going to be announcing these tour dates. Is it to gather interest for its countries? But, like, isn't that interest already declared in her previous sales or her previous tours? Like,
those are great questions.
Yeah. I feel like that could have been dealt with a little better, just for the fans' sake. Because you don't want to fly down to a country when you have the opportunity of having it in your own country. And you just don't know that yet.
I saw one woman, I think she... Oh my god, this actually really bothered me. But basically, it was this American woman on TikTok, I think. And she was talking about how she was really annoyed that the prices for the South American... Like, to go to the South American dates, the prices were, like, lower than, like, the prices of the American date tours. And she was like, wow, I can't believe Taylor is discriminating against us Americans or something. And everyone was just like, no, it's because the tickets are proportional to average income. And the average income in a lot of South American countries is lower than America. So the prices of the tickets have to be lower, too, to meet the demand. So I don't know, I feel like that was really... And her TikTok got too many likes, in my opinion, of people being like, yeah, exactly. Why does she hate us Americans so much?
I think that is a really bad point to say so boldly. Because the Americans get the most amount of tour dates. Like, you get so many in one city. Whereas in Canada, you have it in, like, one city, Toronto, and nowhere else. And then you have to... I guess, come down here if you're anywhere else in Canada.
And if they priced the Eras Tour the same amount that they priced it in America, there would not be that many people attending because the global income is not the same everywhere for people in America.
I guess that goes into dynamic pricing too then, because like lower income probably means lower demands for it, so lower prices. That does make sense in the context of how she... prices of tickets. Yeah, but that's just such a wild statement to make. You cannot be saying that.
It was a very American thing to say. I think we can talk a bit about social media, because Taylor wasn't, from what I remember, she was pretty active on social media in 2020, 2021. at least on TikTok, she wasn't that active. But then recently, she's recently been doing a lot of stuff. So I've been happy to see it.
That's very true. Especially, I remember before Midnights, there was so much. Like, there were these sneak peeks into the Midnights and the Torture Poets Department. There was, like, sneak peeks into the Torture Poets Department room. You know what I'm talking about? And there were so many of these. As well as track name releases.
Mm.
So that harbored a lot of interest.
I loved what she did for Midnights in announcing the titles of each song.
Yeah.
I still want to know, like, why she held the phone upside down for two songs. Was it just random?
Nothing's random with Taylor.
I think that kind of feeds into the Easter eggs. Because now people will pay attention very closely to anything she does or that her team is doing. Because there's a possibility of there being Easter eggs. So, like, for example, a couple months ago, a lot of people thought that Reputation Taylor's version was going to come out soon because when they went on her website, it glitched for a second and it went to black. So a lot of people were like, oh, maybe this is a sign, but then nothing happened. So I don't know if something is happening or not. But like everything she does, people have started dissecting into an Easter egg just because she had so many in the past. So that definitely builds up interest.
That was really prevalent with the Walt releases. Like, everyone was like, oh, what is this Walt song going to be? And then there were so many videos just with a bunch of Easter eggs. I feel like at this point, Swiftie, they're professional investigators. Like,
I agree. Sometimes they take things that I'm like, no way could this be an Easter egg. And they connect it. And I'm like, oh my god, how did you figure this out?
They're so smart.
This is reminding me of back in the early days. No, this was like 2019, I think. Or, like, late 2019, maybe 2020, but I remember Taylor posted, like, a picture of a fence, and the fence had 5 holes in it or something, and people were like, oh, she's counting down to something.
Okay, but what does a fence have, like, were they big holes?
Yeah, it was, like, you know those picket fences? And you, if you, they're, like, crisscross, so there's, like, holes.
Ah.
So people were like, it must mean something, and still nothing has come of it.
That's very funny. There's definitely a few Easter eggs that nobody's pointed out yet. I remember, like, watching those video dissections where it was, like, breaking down all the Easter eggs and Taylor Swift's Look What You Made Me Do video, blah, blah, blah. There was so many in that one, by the way.
I feel like we still haven't found all of them, but there's always going to be some that we missed.
Yeah. That is kind of fun, though.
I have a bit of, what is it called? There's a word for this. What is he? Oh, I have a bit of a pet peeve with Easter eggs, though. It's when people make the most random... Wait, it's like when she goes out and does something. Like, people are like, oh, actually, she told us all along. And they bring up this, like, really random thing. And then they somehow connect it to what she did. But it's, like, so random and so vague. And they're like, she's such a genius. And I'm like, that's not even an Easter egg. You just made up that connection on your own. And that just bothers me. Because it's not really an Easter egg. They're just bringing up this very unrelated thing she did. And just make up stuff to make it correlate to what the actual action was. Did that make sense?
Can you give an example? I feel like that would help a lot.
Okay, for example, I think for Tortured Poets, there were a couple... I can't think of anything specific, but there were a couple of things... like, outfits she went out in or something, and people were like, oh, look, this proved, like, the Tortured Poets era had started. She was telling us all along, but it was literally just an outfit.
Oh,
and I was like, why are you calling her, like, this doesn't have a correlation. It's not really an Easter egg. You just made this up. Does that make sense?
I get what you mean. I think it is because of, like, all the Easter eggs throughout the years, but at some point, it's just a reach, and you know that it is. So, I don't know why we're talking about it. But I guess it's just, like, a mindset that we've grown into.
Yeah, it's what to be expected.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, I feel like, overall, Taylor Swift is kind of a genius when it comes to marketing.
She and her team have definitely done a lot in that sense.
Like, no wonder she's a billionaire. It makes sense with all her talent combined with her team's help and, I guess, maximizing the profit.
I think she's always... I feel like... Okay, you know how with celebrities, there are times when they are relevant and then you kind of don't hear about them anymore and they come back? It's not like that with her. I feel like she's always kept herself very relevant to pop culture, what's going on, through like music releases, interviews. Like, she's always there, you know? So yeah. I'm interested to see how this plays out long term. But she's obviously going to be successful either way.
Yeah. I do think right now is it's a period of time where I guess she's less talked about. Like, I remember a few months ago, Taylor Swift hate was getting to a peak for some reason. Something, I don't know, it was just like very high. But now it's just died down and then nobody talks about it anymore.
Really? I saw a lot of stuff because she just started the new leg of the tour. So a lot of people have been talking about like her new outfits or whatever.
That makes sense, yeah. I mean, she's coming to Canada next month, so I'm excited for that, for the Eras Tour.
Do you know what you're wearing?
No, that's kind of an issue. I need to figure that out.
Well, I feel like we could make some sort of other video relating to Taylor, because there's just so much to talk about here. So that might be something we will consider in the future.
I agree. Taylor has many, many things we can talk about.
But yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we're done.
Right on time.
Oh yeah, only 2 minutes.
Okay, should I give it to you?